It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. Back to back again.
Yeah.
We're going away. You're going away.
Well, I'll see you up in Shaver Lake, maybe.
Oh, we don't ever see each other. Well, we did once.
Twice. We did.
Yeah, you threw your phone.
Couple times.
Yeah. I'm not sure I should come by.
You wanted me to throw my phone in the lake.
Is there skiing if I come?
I don't know. We are somewhat dependent on the neighbor. There's a wonderful neighbor there with a ski boat that is just...
Can we beat the daylights out of him and just take his boat?
No, but he's already generous and kind enough that maybe we don't need to. So we're hoping that there's some skiing going on.
Pays to be generous and kind. You don't get the whatever beat out of
it. It does.
Yeah, it does.
It does. There's just not a whole lot of those out there.
Yep. A lot of wonderful emails and one voicemail that's kind of wild, but... Let's go back to the book we did, probably four podcasts.
Mistakes were made, but not by Wayne?
Never by me. Nope. It's got to be someone else. I get it all right all the time.
Supernatural powers of rationalization.
Here's what Laura wrote. Laura often writes after a podcast. She has great summations of what was there. She says, there's so much power in letting the sunshine of truth kill the gunk that grows in the dark of secrecy.
Yeah.
Isn't that great language? She was particularly talking about the lawyers from Massachusetts, the pornography group, to help people get free of that is what she's referring to. She says, my husband and I can attest in our own lives how bringing addiction into the light takes the teeth out of it. Anyone who has been or is in recovery from addiction or compulsive behavior can tell you how central and powerful is this first step, coming out of denial, which we repeat as needed. Is the light of truth shines and reveals other stuff that has been swept in the dark corners of our locked closets.
Fear is such an unfair emotion because it makes you pay for something that isn't happening.
Boy, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, you got to pay full freight. I mean, hardly ever is anything as bad as what you feared. So you had to pay for it in excess of what it really was. And I just find it's like, golly.
Oh, that's true. That's true in every year. That's true of fear of the future, what somebody's doing to you. If you're going to live in your fears.
It's a pretty costly emotion because you overreact. I mean, you're shadow boxing and you get knocked out.
Yeah. Yeah. She goes on, participating in a safe environment where no one tries to fix anyone and everyone is trying to be as honest as they know how.
Where's that?
Where's what?
Where's that?
Bose.
Oh.
That's coming up in a couple of months. Hold on. It said, and everyone is trying to be as honest as they know how, while we each deal openly with our various hurts, habits, and hang-ups, is amazingly liberating.
It's true.
You know, we talked about this a little bit a couple weeks ago with the Bose guys, the True-Faced guys in Denver that aired a couple weeks ago. Everybody wants that environment. But everybody doesn't want that environment. And we've learned that environment doesn't exist. You're kind of, well, where's that?
Like, oh, wait, let me see the address. I do think there's a fear and a craving for that same thing. It's like, you know what? When you're in trouble and you really want to get free, you want to find that place.
Yeah.
But when you want permission to do what you're doing, you don't want to go near that place.
Well, I wonder if that place, quote unquote, ever even exists. That really...
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think it's a place in terms of... I want to join a group like that. I think, honestly, some of the 12-step groups do incredibly well at this. Of openness and honesty, level playing field, the banker and a street bum right next to each other going, you know, we're alcoholics or we're whatever.
Can get stuck in that identity, too.
I don't think that's their point either. It certainly wouldn't be mine. But I wonder if, you know, we look for a group to do this, a place, an it, instead of if you've got relationships around you that you can be that honest in, that really is what it's about. And I've never seen a group above two or three or four ever reach or sustain that level of honesty. And I don't even mean like they should somehow, because there's some things down the gut core of your life every passing stranger doesn't need to be in on it. They really don't. No,
and it's not necessarily a blessing to vomit that up on people.
Yeah, people. But if you've got close friendships, I mean, I can sit down with, and these close friendships don't have to be lifetime dudes. I just sit down with a couple of guys, three guys in a restaurant in Colorado Springs on a Sunday morning just because they had some things they wanted to deal with me. And within 2 or 3 hours, the honesty that went on around that table, even two of us didn't know the other two. The other two knew each other fairly well. But the level of honesty just went 2.5, 3 hours of the deepest hurts and disappointments in our lives. Incredible. And the email I'm still getting from that brief exchange of brothers who've taken on their heart things that are concerning me right now in real prayer and insight, and I got this little nugget from Jesus. Does this fit anywhere in what you're going through? That isn't a place you have to find, create, whatever. God can drop it into your life at a moment's notice.
Wow.
Just being aware. But I love it. Where everyone is trying to be as – where nobody's trying to fix anybody. That's really key.
See, that's huge.
We are infinite fixers.
Well, yeah.
With each other's lives.
I think most people – I've learned this kind of the painful hard way of just realizing that I too, are a fixer. And the most help I've ever done with some people is just listening. The arrogance of assuming, oh, I just heard your problem for the first time. You should do this. As opposed to realizing, I think this person has lived with this for quite a while. Chances are, if there was any way to observe it, they've looked at that numerous times over. So I'm probably not going to come up with the magical wisdom that is just going to go, oh, have you thought? No, I never did. And yet, we're well-intentioned. But a lot of times, like, people are wounded by the fact that I'm just trying to solve it, whereas they're trying to just be heard.
I wonder if our passion to fix it, too, doesn't in part stem from I don't like somebody to be in a vulnerable, hurting spot. So if I can fix it, it's not even for them I'm trying to fix it. If I can think I fix it or give them something that's supposed to fix it, I can take emotional distance. It's not just weeping with those who weep. And rejoicing with those who rejoice. It's I've got to fix you because I don't want to deal with your pain. I got enough of my own.
I think there's a lot of people that they don't know what to do. And they feel this, I'm somehow supposed to say something.
Yeah.
And I've found myself a lot more quiet at moments going like, oh, I don't know what to say. So I don't feel the need to say something because I don't have anything to say.
Or even if you do have something to say, realize now might not be the time to deal with it.
Yeah, that requires a little wisdom, though.
Yeah, just the passion to fix something, I think, is one of those ways we screw up relationships. Instead of just be a brother or a sister with somebody going through a rough patch. Just be that.
Yeah.
You may be helpful in getting something fixed, but your passion to fix it, not going to be helpful probably in the relationship. It's going to make you do something really stupid. Right after we did the podcast on, I forgot about this. I'd made a note in my journal about it. But back when we finished the podcast about mistakes were made but not by me and the whole idea of living in the light, living in truth, I read out of the message the next day, 2 Thessalonians 4:1-2 says this, "The Spirit makes it clear that as time goes on, some are going to give up on the faith and chase after demonic illusions put forth by professional liars." It's Paul talking. "These liars have lied so well and for so long, they have lost their capacity for the truth."
Now,
Paul's writing the elect and saying that.
Translate that into not hyperbole. What do you think that is saying?
Well, in the context of Paul's writing about the last days and the deception of the last days, if you don't have a heart for the truth, lies are easy to believe. And people tell and retell stories until they believe, put forth by professional liars. I mean, they just have created this whole, I think it's that, when we talk about a self-justification reality. You live inside a lie so long, you forget it's a lie.
I know, but nobody says, here, I have a demonic illusion for you.
No
one's billing it as, oh, hi, follow these demons or these deities. So
it kind of loses its power, doesn't it?
Yes, it does a little bit.
I'm about to tell you a demonic lie.
I was
none of this is true. Yeah, professionals wouldn't do that.
But I think one of the challenges...
It's an act on stage. That's all it means. It's an act on stage. But when you believe it's reality, you get caught in a demonic illusion because the devil does his stuff in the dark. And in the fears you talked about a few moments ago, God does his stuff in the light. That's as great a contrast as the God and Mammon thing we talked about last week.
Yeah, I guess I'm wanting to just sort of extract a little bit of the devil demon language. Not that it's not true and real. It's just nobody thinks in those terms. I think these things are far more subtle.
You don't wake up every morning looking for demonic illusions?
No.
Okay. Yeah, I get your saying. I'm just kidding.
I think so oftentimes it's like you just go like, I've got to deal with the normal things of life. And what I believe to be true is, you know what? Some of those are that demonic deceptions. I don't see them with horns and as little creatures. But the truth is that's what's empowered behind that. And I don't want to get all hyper about that. But it's like, that's why, how do I live this thing out in the normalcy of life, realizing there's things out there that want to ensnare me?
Yeah, isn't Paul's point all deception is demonic? He's not trying to say there's demonic deception.
Right, yeah. So all I just wanted to tone that back to normal life. It just says, yeah, that is what's behind it. I only wish it was that clear.
To me, the last phrase is the saddest thing I've read. Lost their capacity for the truth.
That's terrifying.
That's not where I ever want to end up about anything in my life.
And that, but you know what?
But I know people who have. I know people who live there.
You have to justify yourself there.
And you got to have friends around you. And you've got to keep people from letting you get real input from people because they're trying to protect this lie. I've had close friends of mine go through this kind of situation. And you can always tell where it's going on because when I don't want to deal with truth, there are people I don't deal with. I keep people away from me. Because they won't sustain the lie I'm in, and I can cry abuser at anybody who confronts the lie I'm in because I want to stay in that space of darkness.
See, I don't think it's that easy to get there.
No, I don't think it's easy.
No, I'm sorry.
I agree.
I don't want to be afraid of, I'm going to get there, because I think it's like, you know what? You do have to try. I think the grace of God and his desire to draw us to truth is so ever present that it's like you almost have to kind of sear your conscience kind of thing to end up staying there.
Yeah, but self-interest will get you. I don't know anybody that chooses, I think I'll believe a lie. There's something in the lie you value.
Yes.
So self-interest is not people. Yeah, I'm gonna lose my capacity for truth. But I think
you know what? I had it in my pocket earlier.
when I orbit around my own self-interest, that scripture we used last week. Oh. The more I grab, the less I am.
Oh.
I think that's the danger, and keeping our hearts in this path of light is really a wonderful thing to do. And it's increasing light, but you've got to somehow find a way. First John, I used to think when he said, if we walk in the light as he is in the light, I used to think that's perfection. I'm never going to walk in the light as he is in the light. But I don't think that's what he means at all. I think what he's saying is if you'll just
close
walk,
your eyes.
Yeah, let me be seen for what I am. Let my life be an open read. And realizing we're all broken people. So once I think I've got it all together and don't, that's probably where we're most deceived instead of, my goodness, I'm a brother on a journey.
Or even thinking that that's somehow what I need to be doing. Yeah. I need to demonstrate to somebody else that I got it all together. See, that's where I get worth. That's where you're going to feel great about me. It's like, and so what? I mean, God bless you if you can. Didn't that come by the grace of God anyways? Are you trying to now take credit for having it all together?
It happens.
I know, but I think that's where I go. I am finding the generosity of God's searchlight all around. And it's like, you can close your eyes and pretend it's not there, and you, at that moment, are in the dark. But for anyone else, I don't even have to go try searching for the light switch. It's there. The light's on.
Yeah.
It's acknowledging it. It's seeing that as freedom. It's not being afraid of that, because it's not there to expose you and to destroy you. It's there actually to heal.
Yeah.
And I think if my brain can kind of switch and get around the fear corner, then it's like, you don't have to hide. What value is there in hiding? I mean, I go back to the little garden moment where, you know, here you got, God takes a walk with the first couple of people every day in the cool of the day. I don't know what that was like, but that got to be pretty cool. You just go like, wow, that's got to be fantastic. In the midst of that, they've truly messed up. This is earth-shattering. Humanity is now in a ditch moment. And God still shows up going like, hey, Adam. Hey, Adam, you around? Adam, you here? And it's like he knows enough to know that that's God. And he's sitting behind a bush and he's going like, that's got to be a goofy moment. He doesn't see you? I mean...
I'm sure it's goofy from that level, yeah.
The self-deception of that moment of going like, well, it's not as if he doesn't know, and it's not as if he doesn't see. And if he's saying, Adam, it isn't because he got a sledgehammer he's going to take you out.
But he doesn't know that. You know,
Adam, but that's what fear does. That's the goofy
stuff.
Yeah,
what ruins you is here is God coming down in the cool of the day, and on this day, Adam's considered that not safe.
Yeah.
And God, for the first time, has his own creation running from him.
That's got to do.
What a rotten day on both fronts. What a rotten day.
Yeah.
And that's what darkness does. I think the whole idea of grace is not sin doesn't matter. It's that now I can live in the light with my sin and brokenness. And then God gets to be the bigger part.
You know, I ask the question, is like, where is that place? You know, we were talking earlier about...
A safe environment where no one tries to fix anyone and everyone is trying to be honest as they know how we deal openly with the very habits, hurts, and hang-ups.
It could be called right here now. I mean, if you want it, it isn't a place. It is a someone.
It's not a group to find in the Yellow Pages.
And the only one that I know that's really safe, if you want to use that word, to be and do that with necessarily is... Where God's present, and whether he's inhabiting a someone or is he having a couple of friends, in that moment, I don't have to be frightened.
Yeah. I think what helps most is when other people live in the light, it's easier for you to live in the light. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not real fun when you're living in the light and everyone else is living in darkness.
No, and for all the hiding we do, no one really enjoys pretenders. When somebody opens their life up in a very honest struggle, everyone in that conversation is enriched by that. I don't know anybody goes away going, boy, I really don't respect that guy anymore. I didn't know he had fault weaknesses. Because we all know we have them. The pretending we don't is exhausting. And so when someone finally opens up, you go, oh, man, I love that. Everybody loves that. But we don't live it always.
You know, I know this is going to air a couple weeks after this is reality, but I find it incredibly goofy that here you have something in the news cycle of our nation that's between a police officer and a guy that, you know, got dragged out of his own house. And here's the president making comment of it. And now you got to have the president sort of apologizing for overstaff. And I just go like...
He hasn't apologized yet. He's been tough. He might be when this airs.
Well, you know, I just go like, golly, doesn't the president of the United States have something a little more important to focus on?
No. No, because he was trying to. He was trying to do health care, and it was a little bit boring, actually.
Isn't this absolutely stupid?
Yeah, well, that's what he was saying. The Cambridge police were stupid.
I thought it was
the best part of the press conference.
Fact,
come on, dude.
This is a part of the news cycle, and we're stuck here, and we're needing a presidential apology. And they're coming
Well,
I'm never going to apologize. He's just going like, golly.
I'm sure he regrets that he ever said it.
I know.
It's taken him off message. But that's beside the point.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Let's get back on message.
Sorry. It wasn't on the teleprompter.
We got a great voice mail from Fester S. Cooch.
You got to play this. Fester. Bring it on, baby.
Well, hi there, Wayne and Brad. As here is old Fester S. Coots. I just felt compelled to come at y'all and just tell you what a blessing, what an indeed blessing that there God journey has been up unto me and my family. I've just gotten some powerful uplifting and encouragement from it. Really has done freed me up from so much of this performing thing that I've been so trapped in from time to time. I just feel like every time old Fester used to feel like when I walked out the front door, I had to start spinning plates and doing a magic show and singing the song and doing a dance and performing just to get things that Fester wanted, just try to get people's approval and stuff. And boy, I tell you, I read that book there, The Shark, that was written by there, the Windblown Major. And that shark is one of the best books I have ever read. Props to you folks for putting that thing out. That's revolutionary is what that is. That book just helps just sort of straighten your mind out and just think a certain way, and it's a good deal. It's just amazing to be able to come to the point where you start at least getting a clue that you can live loved and be free from them trappings of the religious performing thing. So, Wayne and Brad, I just want to tell you how much I appreciate you. I just want you to keep on putting them podcasts out every week, because it's just it's an important part of Fester's week. And I've shed a few tears here and there, and it just, you know, when you know that the good Lord's doing something inside of you, and then he sends two people along, such as yourselves, Wayne and Brad, just to confirm things, it's just a beautiful, beautiful thing. So you just keep on slinging that grace, because old Fester loves to see that grace slung around. And you just know that old Fester appreciates you. And I just pray that God just open up the windows of heaven for everything y'all do and put your hand to. All right? Y'all take care now. Old Fester here's got it going on.
All right. I like Fester. I like
Fester.
That
was hilarious.
We're probably going to start talking like him. I thought it was hilarious.
Great job. Darren sent that to Duran, I think is how you pronounce his name, from Tennessee, sent us that little thing. It's on YouTube if you want to go look at it. It's
you
called,
mean it's not Fester?
Duran sent it to us. I didn't mean he's not Fester. If you want to go on YouTube,
I'm
you can
find it.
I'm
friends with Fester on Facebook.
Greetings to Wayne and Brad and the God Journey. You can find that on YouTube if you want to. I had a lot of humor in that.
A lot of truth in it, too.
But the reality of seeing people live free. I mean, I was involved in this last trip to Colorado and Michigan, which is now 3 weeks probably since this is airing. But since I just got back from that, I met so many people, heard some wonderful stories about how God's been transforming people who kind of getting unstuck from the religious performance thing and learning to live inside the affection of the Father. From someone who lost a child to an alcoholic trying to commit suicide with alcoholism to a transformation in his life just coming out of some of the space that we're talking about. I tell you what, to know that people are finding a way to live more graciously in the life of the Father than just pumping religion, that blesses me, man. That's why we started this thing, so people could have that kind of conversation with us if they're not getting it anywhere else.
Well, I think as that starts to take root, that's where you do get those pockets of people who are just saying, you know what, I don't want to be owned by that stuff. I don't want to perform for it. I want to just live and enjoy what that life is. And that's where the goodness of God does start to shine out. Because, you know, he isn't looking to get me. You know, the whole phrase that, you know, God's watching you. I get so bummed out when that's sort of like that fear-based, uh-oh, you're in trouble now kind of phrase. He is going like, what a terrible thing. As opposed to the beauty of the fact that there's never been a moment he wasn't watching you. And he's thrilled.
And not watching you like, you stupid moron, I'm going to have to hold myself
it's
back from
like
killing you.
It's not like a bad movie going like, oh, man, I wish they would get this right.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think that, you know, the whole phrase that, you know, God's thoughts are not our thoughts, his ways are not our ways, and they're higher. It's like, guess what? It isn't a put down to humans.
Yeah.
It's the generosity of his heart towards us.
Yeah, and if that whole description of religion from Fester isn't that twirling plates and dancing a step and trying to get the performance down. I mean, that's what's so exhausting about the performance track. You're never doing enough, you're never doing it right, and you're never doing it well, and God's always upset. And living inside the love of a Father who wants to win you out of the places you got lost and stuck, even if you end up alone for a while, we know a lot of people do. We know when you jump off the performance track and you've been on it a while and all your friends are on that performance track and nobody likes being on it, but now that you're off of it, you're getting...
They all kind of resent that.
Really bad vibes from them and suspicions about you. We got this email from Marianne in Massachusetts. It says, love your podcast. Took me several months, but I just completed listening to all of the archived episodes.
What?
We do not recommend
That's
this, by the way.
5 years.
We do not recommend this, by the way. Just pick up where we are and go on. Now, if you're interested in some of the topics back there, by all means. She said, I'm hoping my withdrawal won't last long. Well, I guess you can always go back and hear him again, Marianne. Me too. So I have learned so much from listening to both of you sharing your individual journeys. The most important element I have gleaned from you is that it's okay just to be. And embrace the reality of Father's love. I am being weaned from those familiar feelings of futility, frustration, and fatigue. Boy, we had hurt something and hang-ups a while ago. And
I'd love to know how she thought.
Alliterating.
We've grown.
How we've grown?
I hope so. I hope you can see.
Yeah, well, me too.
Forward progress.
I assumed it was true.
Okay.
Believe me, if other people don't see it, I know
how much this guy has changed. I go like, wow.
She said, I am being weaned from those familiar feelings of futility, frustration, and fatigue from always trying to do. the process is not always easy, and I have a whole bunch to unlearn, but it's all good. He is all good. After reading The Shack last summer, I began I began the pursuit of truly seeking him and him alone. There are parts of the book that had me literally shouting aloud, I knew it. I just knew it. There's more to God than I ever imagined. I love that.
That's sweet.
My next move was to buy the books mentioned in the back of The Shack, hoping they would help me on my quest to know him better. He loves me, so do my church anymore. Confirmed I was not alone on this journey. The others were seeking that for that more of him just as I was. I'm at the point in the journey, as I really have no one to personally share it with yet. Sadly, some of my former pew mates, even a few from the raised platform area of the arena, have chosen to scold me for forsaking the assembling. Even in the midst of the solitude, I am not lonely, as I am experiencing the freedom of living loved by Father and getting to know the true heart of Jesus like never before. Boy, that's a journey worth being on. Gracious. I love that.
You launched, for me, what was a wonderful little hand grenade, I think, in the last podcast that we never really explored.
But a week ago? You expect me to remember that?
Yeah, I do, because it was about 5 minutes ago.
Okay, 20.
Somewhere like that. It wasn't that long ago. The whole dynamic of when you look at the early church, they're gathering around a life that's present, that's capturing them, as opposed to embracing the mandate of the Great Commission.
Oh, you're going southern there. I like y'all.
You know, God, duh. And I just think that's like, it's sad, as opposed to living in the simple enjoyment of God adding to their numbers every day, as many as were being saved. That sounds like somebody else is doing the catching and the cleaning and the
frying.
We do the
and
frying.
The grilling. We'll gut them and grill them.
We gut them and grill them. He catches and cleans. You know, it's like, that's sad. Especially when I have something to say about that.
He would. And rightly so.
The reality is they simply were responding to life around them, and it seems as if what we've inherited is the mandate to go make it happen.
Yeah, almost every group of people starts with, how do we do church in a way that will create healthy ministry, healthy discipleship, healthy community?
I think right there you've just jumped off the wrong...
This is the hand grenade I love leaving in rooms when some of those management teams have me in to go, what changes here if we go down this journey? One of the things is saying, you know what, we read all that stuff in Acts 2 and 3 and 4 about what the church became, in the apostles teaching, house to house, breaking of bread and prayer. And we're saying, that's what the early church did.
See, that's the recipe. We'll just make that. That omelet's going to be fantastic.
If we copy those symptoms, we're going to catch the disease. And it's just that dumb with the,
Say that again.
The swine flu virus. Yeah, I'm going to pretend I have the flu so I can get the flu instead of, no, you really want to catch the disease. I think the disease.
Copy the symptoms so as to catch the disease. And it just doesn't work that way.
And I realize it's a counterintuitive illustration, but what the early church seemed to catch,
I get there, you feller.
Was that Jesus was alive and lived in them, and their whole worlds were brighter because God had come to redeem them to himself.
See,
so they didn't start a system based on accountability and performance. They fell into loving each other, and people who love each other.
It was the natural outworking of life.
Yeah, they're in each other's homes. I got to start there. I've got 150 books on my shelf about how to do church. All of them use the same scriptures. None of them agree with each other.
And sitting on your shelf, none of them work.
And no, that's why two new ones come out every year.
Yeah.
Because now we'll give you the plan. We
forgot this one piece.
What's the model? What does this look like? You know what it looks like? Get people alive in Jesus. Like we talked about, are living in the light with their hurts and hang-ups. And community happens.
Yes.
It's not rocket science.
Yeah. And I can't get you into that life. I can only live it wherein you are invited.
And I'm not sure I can organize it so other people can get it.
No, I don't.
I think it's a growing sense of relationship. I think the early church was. Can you imagine the night after Pentecost? Peter's going, oh my gosh, we got 3,000 people here. Let's divide into groups of 60. See, we need 500 groups. And nope, that's too big. There'll be enough sharing if there's 60. Okay, let's get it down to 12. Okay, it's 10,000 groups. We need to train some home group. Thomas, would you take on training some home group leaders for us? And John, would you get a scene? You just had the whole idea that this didn't begin with management.
No.
It began with life.
No.
And that life expanded among a group of people. And that, to me, that's how I see it now. I think what the church is the fruit of something, not the cause of something. And I don't think most – when I say that and walk out of a room, I've got a whole elder group of people going,
huh? Oh,
no, it's like, I don't touch that. That will kill us.
Right.
In a wonderful way, because I think they're just really realizing we do it all backwards, and then we wonder why it's backwards at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Why it doesn't work. Because we've said we'll accomplish this by doing this, and this doesn't produce that on its best day.
You know, it's just crazy. I was reading a Newsweek the other day, and I forget exactly what it was, but there was a phrase that I came across in this article. It was about some kind of religion, I think, over in India. And it was talking about, you know, it was the fifth largest organized religion. And it was that phrase that just jumped out at me and hit me on the forehead a couple times. I sat there going, oh, yuck. I mean, I sat there going, like, wow, they're the fifth largest. Like, what, nice achievement. You should be proud of yourselves.
Well, it's not that. That's not the competition you want to win.
But, I sat there going, like, isn't that what we do? You can't organize life. You can appreciate it. You can't make it happen.
No. I said everywhere, community is a gift God gives. You recognize where it's happening. You do not go somewhere and create community. You only create a facsimile of it.
Yeah, but you organize. You don't organize life.
Mm-mm.
I appreciate it. I acknowledge it. I can recognize it when it's there. But I can't organize it because I'm not the life source of that.
And I can't preserve it. Where it is good, and then people say, ooh, let's make some covenants. Let's do, you know, one of the things the Family Room Media guys is – little group that was getting – they did a little skit thing where these guys were going to start a men's group, and they're all wanting to sign covenants to be committed to it. And one guy's saying, you know, I don't really want a commitment. And they're all jumping on him going, hey, you're not committed. You're independent. Selfish thing. He's going, really, I don't need a – I'll be here, but I don't want to make a commitment. It makes it all funky. And the next week, he's the only guy that shows up. I think that's how it almost always works with community. The guys that want to organize it really don't want to have it. The people who don't need the organization are going to have it anyway.
Well, they don't want to have it. They want to achieve it. It's like I got to somehow accomplish something that satisfies something else.
That's, how else am I going to sell my Start Your Small Group?
Right, and how do I become book. Successful and feel good about myself in my effort to be a great Christian? I think the reality is when I saw that phrase, organized religion, I went, you know, that's the problem. I have no problem with something having, you know, when you look at what life is, you look at, like, the DNA, guess what? There is a structure to it. But I didn't do it. I can try to replicate it. I can try to clone it. But there's something really funky about that. It's not the same as when it is authored by God. And he is the life source. And I think every time when someone organizes religion, you get a whole bunch of other practitioners who are confused of who the source is.
Well,
they end up looking at the leader as opposed to the source.
The leader.
Yeah.
With a capital L. Yeah, my biggest issue with organized religion is the religion part. I don't care if it's organized or disorganized. Religion is a terrorism of the human heart.
Explain that. I don't know if everyone's going to get that.
Well, I define religion not as someone's faith. That's how some may define religion. I define religion as human effort to earn God's approval. Wherever we're going to organize our human effort, and that, those are words like accountability and performance and standards and, you know, ethics and all that stuff, I think that doesn't have a chance of looking like a real community because that's more about pretending than it is about being real and being honest and being open. I know people hear us talk this way and they're going, you guys are really against structure. And I'm not against structure. I'm against structure as a substitute for life.
Yes, well said.
When life begins to happen, when people begin to resonate with each other, if they say, hey, you know what, why don't we meet every couple of weeks or why don't we do this together? And other people say, yeah, I'm in on that. And structure takes some shape. I think structure is part of it. This podcast takes some structure. We got to come over here. We got to record stuff. We got to keep a website up. There's nothing wrong with structure. It's when structure overwhelms the life or even ends up substituting for the life. That's where structure becomes deadly.
Or mandates you continue to do something that has no life.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's one of the biggest pitfalls that a lot of people get into is God does something wonderful. They're there, they're participants, they go, wow, this is amazing, it's great, let's continue doing this, which is a natural response to what happened.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden when, quote, the cloud moves and God's kind of done a little something different, they still want to say stuck around the thing that he did. And they feel this somehow religious mandate that we must do. And you're just going like, well, who said?
Yeah, it's the best illustration I ever heard from that was a guy walking through the Kremlin. And he saw a guard stationed by a wall, which was no doorway. There's nothing by that wall. And so he asked this guy, why is that guy guarding that? I said, oh, back, you know, I don't know how long, 150 years ago or whatever, Catherine walked through there, one of the czars or wives of a czar. I don't know my Russian history all that well, unfortunately. But they're walking through, and she sees the first crocus of spring after a brutal winter. And she says, station a guard on that so no one picks it or destroys it. The guard's been standing there for 150 years or whatever because it just got to be the program. And I think...
Was there a plant still there?
No, a plant long gone. That's what I'm talking about.
But we still got a guard there.
Preserving the form when the life is gone. I don't know of a better example than that. That's why I'm not against structure.
I know people, a bunch of those places.
I know people who genuinely find life in the rituals of a high church service. Genuinely, they hear the ritual, they hear the readings, their hearts soar into the presence of the living God. And I am not against people finding, I'm not even trying to get you to doubt your experience. If you're finding God in those places, good on you. But if it's dead ritual to you, and if you're not finding God in those places, then find out where you do find him and resonate with him. I think that's when the life...
Hang out there.
Yeah, the life has more to do with what's going on in here than whatever's going on out there.
Yeah.
But I don't think we're honest about that. I think what people often say in those settings is, if this isn't life to you, it's because you're not trying hard enough and you're not really committed and because you're rebellious and
right.
You're committed. And that's
come
the
on,
lie.
Come on, catch the disease.
That's the... Yeah, please. Or at least if you can't catch the disease, pretend better. Yeah. You're not pretending well. You're causing us some grief here. I think that's exactly right, because God's invited us to life. It's the life that's in the Son. And once you know that life, no ritual is going to sustain that.
No.
And even if you find it in a group, once you decide to preserve that instead of, boy, recognize where it is, and sometimes, unbelievably, that goes south. Somebody decides they don't want to be involved in it, someone, whatever. And when it goes south, it goes south. I think just letting God bring community into our lives by us just loving who's before us is the best way to go here.
Well, the whole dynamic that, you know, something's never supposed to go south. I mean, I don't know that I want to say that, oh, it's supposed to fail. It's supposed to, but it's like, there's life cycles to all of life. And it's like, how about realizing that that's okay.
And let it grow when the crocus dies.
Yeah.
Enjoy it while it's there.
No, put a guard there. Stop it.
Reserve.
It will help it not die.
Heck, now we just laminate it so we could have it for 250 years. And what's the deal with that, really?
I don't get that. And I think that there's just such a funky way of looking at some of the beauty that's in the New Testament and the life that they shared. And thinking that somehow we're going to manufacture that, like, you know, like that's the even the pinnacle. You're just going like, wait a minute, this is probably some 2,000 years ago, and we're not supposed to have grown corporately beyond that? I thought that was supposed to be the foundation that we get to build on, and he is still the life that's going to lead us. Are we supposed to be being brought into a greater dimension of the promises being fulfilled as opposed to making that the nehushtan of, ooh, that's the great moment?
You would hope. You would hope this remains a journey, that God is transforming us, that there are things that are seasonal. And I think some of the relationships in our life are seasonal. I mean, you and I have had a great relationship the last 8 or 9 years. Who's to say it's eternal? I don't know we get it till the end of the age. It'd be great if we do.
Well, what are you saying, Wayne?
I'm just saying. I've got lifetime friendships, people that have meant something to me my whole life. I've got a group of them coming down here and spending the weekend with us a couple weekends from now. And really looking forward to just resonating with people I've known for a whole long time in my life that feed my journey, that sustain that, that bless it and encourage it. And I've got people I met last week that in wonderful ways God begins to link lives together. And I think we celebrate all that instead of organizing it in any way. I've got to bring everybody into the same meeting to have fellowship with them. No, I don't. Never have had to. And being able to live in the spontaneous wonder of the unfolding reality of the body of Christ in the world, then you find that Jesus is, in fact, building his church in a way that we could not conceive or replicate.
And if you allow that, talk about something becoming alive. When you know you didn't manufacture it and you're there, those moments are amazing because they speak of what is really true. God was in our midst.
And if I didn't build it, I don't have to own it.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.